exciting.
Welcome to PDGA Radio with Grant Zellner and Jennifer Allen. We've got an action-packed show for you this week. A bit later on in the episode, Jennifer and I get a chance to sit down with Jessica Jacquois and Scott Merritt. They are the TD and assistant TD of the Las Vegas Challenge. So we'll get a chance to hear about the final preparations for the first DGPT event of the 2023 calendar year. But first things first, a huge announcement from the Professional Disc Golf Association. So huge, in fact, that you may notice we had to delay this episode of the podcast about 24 hours because we just couldn't let this announcement go without talking about it this week. And in order to help me do that, the marketing director from the PDGA, my boss, Danny Voss, joins me right now on PDGA Radio. Welcoming into the PDGA Radio studio, because he threatened to fire me. I'm kidding. Danny Voss, my boss, the director of marketing at the PDGA, here to help me make a pretty spectacular announcement. Depending on when you're listening, you may or may not already know that we are releasing today brand new logos and other branding for the PDGA. Danny, I mean, it's a big day.
Yeah, boy, this has been a long time coming. The entire team here, the marketing and media team, has worked really, really hard, along with a lot of coordination with other folks at the PDGA. It's really special. I'm really excited. I think everybody's really excited.
So it's all over our social media channels. It's up on the website, pdga.com. There's a long form article there that goes into some of the things that we want to kind of highlight today. First of all, this logo update and all the other brand peripherals, this is the first update of its kind in more than a quarter century, which I've said that to two or three people now, Danny, including people from the PDGA, and they look at me like I'm making that up until they stop for a moment and sort of count on their fingers and realize, yeah, 1997 or so is when the logo that most people know was created. And by my count, that's about 26 years ago. Why now? Why are we updating and why are we doing it at this point in history?
Yeah. So, you know, the reason why is it's been 25 years. It's been a quarter of a century. Like, yeah, when you say it like that, it is kind of nuts. But you know, the big thing that me and, you know, you and the rest of this team has been tasked with is to create something that's more inclusive and representative of the global body of membership that comprises the PDGA. You know, what does the PDGA represent? It's not just a guy throwing a disc at a basket. It's all of the members and tournament directors and volunteers worldwide. So let's try to broaden our representation there. So yeah, it's been a long time coming, and that's kind of the overarching goal with this new mark.
Now, there were some older marks even before this one. Through the late 70s, there were some marks. I don't know if any of them could be called truly official. They were just some different marks that were used. And somewhere in the mid-80s, there was a little bit of a formalization. And there was at least one mark that we know of that was used pretty consistently on print materials. And then another one came along in the very late 80s or early 90s, and it lasted about 6-7 years. Maybe another mark kind of squeezed in there and got used too. And that's part of this too, I think, Danny, that I know designers and people that work with marks will maybe recognize is, you know, the former marks were designed in a print world. And in 1997, you know, the internet was barely a thing. It was just kind of becoming a thing. No, YouTube didn't exist yet. Video and streaming as we know it today didn't exist yet. Social media as we know it today didn't really exist yet. We live in a world that utilizes the screen in a variety of formats now. That wasn't the case back then. So that was another aspect, I think, of this brand update, is creating something that was useful across lots of different media types, not just print and collateral, but like screens and different size screens and different capabilities for color. So anyway, all that to say, this was an incredibly fun, very challenging, but incredibly fun project for you and me and another close to half dozen other people that deserve credit. Caitlin Saponi, a graphic designer, Jenny Weigand, another graphic designer, Hayden Henry, a lot of people know him, especially on our social channels, Matt Rothstein. And I mean, that's the media and marketing team. And I wanted to make sure we shout all of them out, because everybody did what, thousands of man hours on this over the course of like 16 months.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely been like a huge team effort. And
Danny, what do you remember of the start, like the genesis of the process? What do you recall?
Right. Okay. So the whole process, you could kind of say, started before I even came on board with the PDGA. So I've been in this role for just under 2 years. But when I came on board and I started, one of the first objectives I was kind of put on my desk by Joe Chargaloff and the board was to do this exploration of a new logo, mark, and branding for the PDGA, for those reasons I mentioned earlier about the representation and modernizing our branding and things like that. So we did what we could when it was a team of just three on the marketing and media team. And we slowly grew, and that growth enabled us to keep this project in-house, which I think was really important for the development of this mark, because being, you know, all employees of the PDGA, we care very, very deeply. We're really close to the brand, obviously. And so I think it just gave us a chance to sort of communicate, go back, go through small little iterations and changes and things like that. You know, you can talk about this too, Grant, but probably the first time that anyone on this team started putting pen to paper, we literally did that in a room in a Holiday Inn conference room, where the five of us that were currently on the marketing and media team, just we went through and we did like 20 logos each. And that was a task that I had kind of assigned to all of us on the team. Like, all right, let's just put our head down. Let's just draw doodles and then come together after that and put them together and see what we might like, what we definitely don't like. And despite some of those rough representations, we got some pretty decent inspiration out of some of that stuff.
Well, and I remember we went a lot deeper than just sketching. We spent a lot of time talking about what the PDGA is to different people, what it had been historically, and whether or not all of those things applied now. In at the time, it was late 2021, I think. But, you know, we went through a process of looking at the old PDGA mission statement or statements over the years. And we looked at a list of values, a pretty extensive list, if I recall. There were like a dozen of them, values that had been identified, I assume, years ago by the board, and were codified and written down for, you know, posterity. And we went through all of those and we talked about how much they apply and which ones of those really stand out. Not that they're not all important. And we sort of honed in on a handful of those that I think became sort of guideposts for us while we started all of that sketching. And which, of course, that's the fun part, right? Getting to, you know, draw all over the walls, you know, which is what we basically did. Apologies to Holiday Inn if we missed the paper. But I mean, we did a lot of that. And we looked at external sources of inspiration, too.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, that's something I'd like to kind of hit on. So we looked at, obviously, other sports governing bodies and, you know, sports organizations and stuff like that. And we kind of identified some of those similar characteristics that might have overlap with the values that you had kind of mentioned. So like things like authority and leadership structure, that kind of thing. But one of the things that we also noticed was this brand architecture that we can, I think we can kind of tease that out right now, because we haven't really alluded to that so much yet so far in this brand launch. But something kind of exciting to look forward to is, firstly, like a unification of the PDGA brand, so that you'll have a much clearer idea of, hey, this is a PDGA platform or property or you know, a PDGA space type of a thing. But then we're going to give, you know, some special treatment to maybe particular initiatives or some of those particular properties that we really want to elevate and have kind of stand on their own. You know, obviously, like some of our international representation will fall under that category, of like having its own sort of platform, because we want to create something that's unique to that geography, right? You know, our women's-based initiatives, that's another one that will kind of get its own treatment. And you see it now. It's kind of been done in the past, informally. And while we like that, we're just going to kind of migrate that to this new branding and find its special place again. So those things are going to kind of trickle out over the next few weeks and months and things like that, which is really, really exciting. So keep an eye out for all that kind of stuff too.
And there's probably going to be even new properties that come up that will instantly have a good way to represent them, whether it's part of the parent brand, as we sometimes call it, or whether it gets its own sort of special, unique treatment. You know, one that comes to mind is this property, PDGA Radio. You know, will sort of have its own iteration, its own sort of freestanding logo and mark and things that you'll see online or on video formats. Throw Green, the Throw Green initiative, you know, that's another example of, for lack of a better term, a property that the PDGA has that sort of deserves its own mark and its own ability to sort of stand alone out there. But then lots of other things will just be married to the PDGA, PDGA Europe or PDGA, like youth and education, things like that. So yeah, there'll be a lot of good looking stuff that at a glance from 300 yards away, you see it flapping in the breeze, you know, on a course, you'll go, I know what that is.
Right. And that's kind of funny. And I think that's a big part of what we're trying to accomplish here is again, that unification and really make you understand and know like, okay, this is definitely associated with the PDGA. You know, another example is our partner mock-up, I'm sorry, partner lockup with the Pro Tour, the official Pro Tour of the PDGA. Like that's had a refresh treatment now. And, again, it's just kind of our way to sort of associate all these different platforms and make sure that we're really unified. And again, like I, probably even more importantly is making them stand out and more easily recognizable at the same time. You know, this new logo mark is definitely a bit more legible and
for sure,
and scalable. The scalable thing is definitely huge. I mean, we can get it down really small for printing on sticker all the way up to blowing that thing out for a trailer wrap or a feather flag or something like that. So we definitely have more versatility as well.
Well, and on that note, I mean, we had to reject a ton of really good ideas because they just weren't functional. They just couldn't work broadly enough. But some of those ideas will come back, and they're going to come back in the forms of icons or in the forms of things like hats and t-shirts. That's something that I'm, you know, I'm excited about is people wearing this stuff, not because they're loyal and because they like disc golf. They're going to wear it because they're like, that's a killer shirt. I can't wait to put it on. Like, that's what I'm excited about.
Yeah. Firstly, I'll have two comments for that real quick. Firstly, everyone should be thankful that my opinion isn't the beginning and end of these discussions because I pushed really hard for a logo concept that just would not have worked. And so I commend everyone on my team for pushing back on that because it paid off in the long run. that was the, you remember the stacked one.
So, oh yeah, that one. Oh, that could be a shirt or something.
Something that we bring back somehow, who knows? Anyways, and then the other thing too is that we have like the opportunity to go back and check out some of those previous iterations and build out little custom pieces of merch or whatever, giveaways. Mm-hmm. And hey, you know, we read these comments on social media. Trust us, we read these. And you know, we've seen people with the past few days looking at the old branding that we're kind of paying some respect to.
That's
like,
right.
Wow, that could be cool. It's like, yeah, it could be cool. Maybe it'll show up when we do a throwback type of thing. Who knows? But like right now, we're really excited for this look to the future and what we've developed here. And yeah, I mean, we take all of that into consideration as we're kind of planning our next steps. So exciting stuff.
We wanted the new mark, and this might be a great time if you're listening to this whole conversation and you still haven't seen it. Maybe this is a great time to reach in your pocket, pull out your phone and go to pdga.com or something. And it'll be right there and you'll see what we're talking about. We wanted the new mark to be able to stand for something global. We want it to stand for something authoritative, but not be like stiff. You know, we didn't want it to be like government or something. We wanted it authoritative, but still fun. We wanted it to have a certain like aspirational, like a hopeful, you know, something that sort of like, I like to call it like upness, like an upness, like it lifts you up. It makes you happy. It feels like the momentum of it is up in the sky somewhere positive. But we also, and I credit some of our, you know, really longstanding staff members and things, Joe Chargaloff, of course, for example, who very specifically said, it's gotta be disc golf. It's gotta be obviously disc golf. And in a world where logos can get really abstract and really kind of spacey and weird, we were like, it's gotta be disc golf. And I think we hit that, you know, right between the eyes. It's the symbolism there is layered and it's not complex, but it's really rich and it's really meaningful. And it's, you're going to see more than one symbol as you look at this mark. And I think that's one of the coolest elements.
Yeah. And that's what I was going to say next, Grant, was I'd love to hear. So put it in the comments on whether it's where you're finding this podcast or on PDJ social media or whatever. Like, what is that first thing that you see? And maybe it's different. I mean, what I see the first time is different than, you know, what, you know, Grant might have seen the first time or what other folks on the team have seen and things like that. So it's just kind of fun to dissect it in that way. And so I'm interested to maybe learn something new about this mark that I didn't even know up until now, despite seeing it 6 million times in the course of the past year. So yeah, it's exciting just overall. It's really, really exciting.
Well, maybe that's a great way to land this plane is to just invite those listening right now, you know, head to one of the PDGA's primary social channels. You'll find us on Twitter. You'll find us on Facebook. You'll find us on Instagram. And clearly at this point, the very first thing you're going to see, the most recent post is going to be the post showcasing this new mark. And you'll have an opportunity right now to tell us, yeah, what's the first thing that you see in the mark? And I expect at least 4 or 5 answers, and I expect additional, and that's just because that's what I've heard so far. I expect several answers that I haven't even heard so far. And that's one of the things that I'm most excited about. So there's your call to action, everybody. Go and check out the new mark and let us know what you see first in the new symbol for the PDGA. Anything else, Danny? Or are we just going to go and start digging through boxes of hats and things like that that are going to be out there in the public within about a week and a half?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think everybody should just be excited. You know, you might actually get some PDJ merch that you'll want to wear. Isn't that exciting? So keep your eyes open for that. And yeah, and I think the last thing that I'd like to say is just, you know, the membership thanks for being along for the ride for the past quarter century with this mark, the now previous mark. And thanks for kind of propping up the work that we've been doing lately and the work that is to come. And we're a membership organization, and that's what we're here. That's why we're working. And just thanks to the members. That's why we're here.
Fun stuff. My boss, the director of marketing at the PDGA, Danny Voss, thanks for dropping by. I know how busy you are, because I am too. So we're going to get out of here.
All right. Thanks, Grant.
Exciting things happening at the PDGA and more to come. So stay tuned. Now, Jennifer and I head out to the desert for a sit down with Jessica Jacquois and Scott Merritt, the event directors for the Las Vegas Challenge. But first, a quick apology. I've gotten a lot better over the course of the last year when it comes to audio and production and all of those sorts of things. One thing I can't deal with, though, is a failing microphone. And that's what happened to my audio in this conversation. So I did what I could to make it tolerable. It's a little echoey, not quite the quality that you might be used to, but still the conversation, that is a high quality way to spend a few minutes. So let's get into it with Jessica Jacquois and Scott Merritt here on PDGA Radio.
Welcome, everybody. PDGA Radio. We have the TDs for the upcoming Las Vegas Challenge, Jessica Jacquois and Scott Merritt. Welcome in.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, everybody.
From sunny, it's still sunny where you are. It's dark where I am as we sit right now, so I'm jealous on multiple levels. Jessica, we wanted to have you and Scott on for so many different reasons. Longtime listeners to PDGA Radio will recall that your husband, Jeff, TD'd the Las Vegas Challenge last year for the last time before turning over the reins to you. And last year, about a year ago to date, in fact, Jennifer, if my memory serves correct, yeah, he told us so many incredible things about what it truly takes to pull off an event of this magnitude. We've got the opening Disc Golf Pro Tour event of the year running concurrently with a tremendous A-tier with loads of amateur divisions participating all on the same property. I wish I had a better question than this for you, Jessica, and you, Scott. How do you do it?
There's not an answer to that, I don't think. There's not a simple answer to that.
362 days of work.
Pretty much.
Yes. Yes. A house full of disc golf stuff and a computer, actually multiple computers full of disc golf stuff and multiple brains. We actually started meeting for LVC with our key volunteers, our key staff that are really our biggest helpers. 6 months ago, we've met at least once a month and, hundreds, if not thousands of emails. And we just try to make it bigger and better every year. So there's really no simple way to say how we do it. We don't know how we do it.
Yeah, the joke is that everybody looks at everybody, Sunday night when the tournament's over and we go, do you really want to do this again next year? And then by, 2 days later, like, yep, okay, let's get started. So, the planning starts right after we're done. So
what a wonderful problem to have.
Jeff opened our eyes, I think, last year, hopefully in a little review for those, if someone missed it, how much money you guys spend for all the stuff behind the scenes that no one really knew about. Even myself as a player, and I've played so many years there, how much it costs for parking, how much it costs to rent the golf course, to shut it down to ball golfers. I mean, all these costs, security, parking, on and on, people think how much money it costs, now caddies and volunteers, that pay to volunteer. You guys raise a lot of money, but it's because of so much expenses go into this tournament behind the scenes.
Yeah, our expenses, are no less than last year. They're probably a little more, even though we've gotten help from know, City of Henderson is coming to be a sponsor this year, so that's cut our parking, you know, situation down, because unfortunately this year we're not gonna be allowed to park on the street outside of Wild Horse. There was a couple of incidents with car accidents last year, and I think somebody had their car broken into, so for just liability reasons, we're keeping like an off-site parking for the non-elite side and for our spectators. So with that, you know, there's an additional cost to have shuttles bring people in, because we can't have like one shuttle running. We don't want anybody to miss their tee times, so we have multiple shuttles running. You know, so it's just everything just seems to build upon the next problem is, you know, more and more expense. So, but you know, hopefully we're raising enough money through our sponsors and through, you know, vendors' fees and everything we can do, you know, and not trying not to pass those costs on to the players, but, you know, so we can cover those costs and give a good payout to all divisions, not just our, you know, elite division, especially.
Well, let's give some ballpark numbers maybe to give our listeners an idea of the scope of what we're talking about here. First of all, the Disc Golf Pro Tour event, right? This is one of the 4-day events that the Pro Tour will be playing this year. How many registered players just in the Pro event for MPO and FPO, roughly?
Just MPO, FPO, there'll be 120 MPO and 60 FPO players.
Okay. And then there's the concurrent A tier going on the same piece of land during the same weekend. How many players have you got registered as of right now for that event?
It's a little over 360.
Okay. That's incredible.
So we're talking about...
It's like a world championship, basically, numbers.
This is 500 some odd players, not counting whatever support people they might have with them, caddies, family members, you know, all of those kinds of things. And now we talk about the volume in terms of spectators and in terms of support staff and volunteers. So can you give me any numbers in those categories?
Yeah, I mean, we can't give a actual number for, like, say, the DGPT side, because we're giving everybody that, you know, enters gets an automatic caddy. They get a caddy to come with them. So they might choose to bring someone. They might choose, you know, not to have anybody with them. So they have a caddy. All the players on the A tier side can register to have a caddy with them if they want, or they don't have to. So again, if you look at that, at say 1.5 per person, you're almost doubling the field size. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's incredible the number of people we have. Volunteers right now, not the key volunteers, not our lead group, but we have 150 volunteers.
Okay.
So we're looking at, you know, that's spotters and crowd control and people doing ticket sales, people doing, you know, players packs, people doing course teardown, course setup, course, you know, it's just on and on. We have lead cards for our FPO and MPO field going a couple deep. We have security going with them to make sure people are standing in the right place. They don't interfere with the play, you know? So, I mean, the groups are going on and on. We have leads for each position that, you know, that's their assignment. Make sure that, you know, you take care of the security here. You take care of, you know, ticket sales. You're taking care of course setup and teardown. So literally after the interview, we're going to a course setup and teardown meeting after this. So keeps going.
Well, and you even put out, Scott, a video to teach your spotters the right and wrong way. I watched it. I tried to share it because, I mean, that's something that, you know, it's hard for most tournaments to get volunteers. You just said you have 150, which is incredible and wonderful all at the same time. But especially if they're trained to do the right thing, especially such a major event. So that video was great. You're training them. They're out there. That makes a tournament run so much smoother.
Well, the idea with that was you know, we've done the volunteers. We have a dinner before the event starts for all our volunteers. You know, kind of get everybody on the same page, give out some extra swag to them, make sure they're happy, make sure we can answer any questions. But I always try to do like a spotter seminar at that, you know, telling them how this and that. But it's easier to put it out in a, you know, video format. That way they can look at it at their leisure, review it, you know. And if there's any questions from there, they can come ask us one-on-one. So we'll have that running, hopefully, during the volunteers meeting, so that they can see if they haven't had a chance to look at it. But, you know, it adds a little more professionalism to the event, for sure.
Absolutely.
Something else, too, is we have over 20 vendors, 20 separate vendors, mm-hmm. and we're still getting requests if we have room, which we do not. We're trying to add space. So vendors typically draw in more crowds, right? More people. They invite friends, they invite family, which we do have our spectator tickets on sale. We've been trying to monitor. I think we're around 400 to 500 ticket sales right now. So,
and we're still a few weeks out. So that's awesome.
Yes. So, I mean, the number of people on site is hopefully going to be the most ever. And we have always from the get-go said we want everybody that's there to have a phenomenal experience, whether you're a caddy, a player, a vendor, a spectator. So with the increase of numbers for all of these people coming in, you know, larger volumes of people, we're just, what else can we do? And it's a nonstop work in progress.
What are some of the other ways? I'm curious because Jennifer, you mentioned this video that you guys produced to train specifically spotters on some of the intricacies of the job that they will have. What are some of the other ways that you prepare your staff and in particular your volunteer staff for what they're going to face during the event? How do you get ready when people are coming from sometimes all over the country just to volunteer? How do you do that?
So luckily for us, we have a pretty loyal volunteer base. People love it so much they want to, you know, come back every year. And we have a very large Facebook page. I don't know what that number is up to, but everybody that's in this Facebook page has volunteered at least once at one of our events. And we are constantly posting on there any updates. That's where we obviously post when our next meeting is going to be. We want you there in person to get as much information as possible. We actually have work days. We were doing at least one a month for, the last 6 or 8 months. Sometimes we did multiple ones a month. And at those work days, we would have meetings before, meetings after. And of course, we're providing food for everybody. So it's a time for us to kind of sit around, chit-chat, pass on some great information, and collaborate.
If the courses are ball golf courses, the Wild Horse, what are you able to do? Are you able to do any work at the course during these work days and the months leading up? And if so, what are you able to get out there and actually do that's not getting in the way of their other, you know, operations?
So we have a fantastic relationship with Wild Horse. And honestly, we wouldn't be able to do what we do if that relationship hasn't been cultivated over the last years that we've been there, right? So Scott really manned the work days. He's the one that you know, manages the courses for the most part. So he really manned the work days, and I showed up to cook food for everybody.
That's important.
But they probably loved you more.
Yes, they are fantastic with letting us work, and we obviously respect when they have golfers out on the course. We respect where we should and should not be, so we're not in the way, and vice versa. They would give us the best times to come out. If they have an event planned, they would communicate that. And they also utilized their own maintenance staff to tackle some pretty big projects that we wanted to get done. So the relationship that we've cultivated is really just, it wouldn't happen without it.
Well, this course is open year round. It's not like it's just open for LVC. So the disc golf course is open to play year round. So the baskets are up. Now, there was several, Scott, how many holes were changed? I know I've watched two of the videos, a handful maybe each course that were changed.
Yeah, there was probably, four on each course. Mm-hmm. There's going to be minor changes, but as far as like changed basket moves or new tee pad, there's at least four on each course. There's going to be added OB just to change things up a little bit this year because, we're doing two courses per division this year rather than the three we have been doing. So we've been able to go, this is our elite course that only the pros, be it the elite series or the age pros, are going to be playing. So they should be better and they should be able to make these shots so we can tighten it up. Or in the past, I had to kind of gear every course to, FA2 through MPO. And you can't make a course too punitive if the FA2 is out there, otherwise you're going to walk off, or even our MA3 division, they're going to walk off in frustration, you know, and say they're never going to come back. But now with that, the change, you know, we can go, oh, now we have a spot we can make, you know, more difficult. Or in the case of our middle course Infinite, which is the course the FPO is going to be playing this year. Now we're looking at, but we're looking at going, hey, this was kind of a tweener hole for our FPO fields, especially. Now we can make a change to make it more attackable and, you know, make it, you know, more birdieable for a great shot or with a little more difficulty to get involved with. But yeah, I mean, we look at statistics every year. We look at break down the numbers on each hole and say, hey, this is a good hole. This is too easy. Maybe it needs to be a change. So we look at that basically from the get-go. Once the tournament ends for the year, we'll start looking at next year.
That's definitely a big change coming into this year. Is we have always played three courses. This year, playing two. I know there's been a lot of pros, you know, requesting two, you know, for a couple of years. The rumors and the talk. Was it more to kind of make everybody happy, or was it more like you just said, so that you could tighten up courses and make them more specific for certain divisions? Or was it a collaboration of both, you know, that really kind of finally made you change to two courses?
It's kind of the past few years we've had a waiver with the DGPT to have everyone play three courses, because the DGPT prefers one or two courses for the elite fields. Gives you a chance to get back at a course, where before you were playing three separate courses at the LVC, there was a cut, and then you got to the, you know, the end of a champion course. So now you're going to get a chance to play both courses, get a chance to get back, and then the finals you'll be on the end of a champion course. So it's just kind of a concession we had to make with the DGPT. I prefer playing, you know, a lot of courses. I mean, I still remember going to Worlds and having to play six courses in 4 days. So, you know, that's kind of my style. But, you know, I can see both sides of it. I know we've talked about it before, so I know your perspective too.
I just love them too. I'm old school as well. I loved all three courses.
Yeah, so it's just kind of making that concession and then being able to go, oh, you know, we didn't know that information until halfway through the year, so couldn't make all the changes that we wanted to everything. But, you know, for the next year,
right,
2024, you know, hopefully we'll get that done.
The history, too, of the tournament has always been to, you know, please the masses, as I said before. Mm-hmm. And this is definitely Jeff's baby, and he's grown it to what it is today. And I think what we wanted to do was the best of both worlds. We feel like we run a pretty good elite event. I hope everybody agrees with that. But we also want to run that fantastic A tier that it's always been. And, you know, the elite event wouldn't happen if we didn't have the A tier side to, you know, help with funding. So we just want everybody to be happy, and we compromise where we can and try to keep the ship sailing straight.
It definitely makes practicing easier. You know, it's always hard. I was always rushing in trying to play all three courses in a day, you know, when you're working or you can't get there all week long to practice. So that part of it definitely helps. There's pros and cons for sure. I think it's probably just the selfishness of loving all three courses. They're all three really great courses. So, you know, we'll miss playing the other one, but I'm sure we will appreciate that extra time just to practice the two and, like you said, learning and executing those two better than three. So.
And we're looking, like I said, we're looking to make some changes for even the next year. And I'm hoping to get some, you know, input from our, you know, FPO and MPO players to come out and say, what can be changed to the better and what can't be. And like I said, we've added some OB, because I had a conversation with Drew last year, who won the tournament. And he was like, you know, the only one thing I can say about the course is that, you know, I can have a fantastic drive, and then, you know, my competitor, you know, ends up slightly rough, and he's almost in the same position as me, and he's off the fairway, and we end up getting the same score. So it's not punitive enough. So we've taken that into account, definitely, to add some stuff in. And there'll be more changes next year, but this year, hopefully, of course, we'll play a little bit harder, for sure.
So would you compare it more getting in line with, like, Winthrop with all the ropes? Or is it not getting that tightened up yet?
I don't want to get that crazy. You know, I've played USDGC a couple times.
I appreciate that.
Played USDGC a couple times, and it I can say it's kicked my butt. So, you know, didn't end up last, but I didn't end up where I wanted, obviously. It's a brutal course, but I don't think we'll get that tight. But we will, you know, there'll be some areas that'll be tightened up. Like you're supposed to execute a turnover shot in the past, especially that hole 5 on the end of a course is one where, you know, you still hit a turnover around the big pine tree.
Right.
You guys are out early. You were just in some trees, but it wasn't out of bounds. And you could kneel down and still get a birdie from out of there. This year, now that area will be roped off as OB. So if you don't execute that shot as a pro, you should be able to execute the shot. If you don't execute it, you're going to have the penalty stroke and you'll be scrambling to save par rather than a birdie. So.
And are most of those going to be OB lines or hazard lines as well?
Most they added is going to be OB lines. We try to keep the hazards as just sand traps.
Nice.
Kind of keep it simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned changes.
Utilize the natural bunkers.
Say again.
Go ahead, Jessica.
Oh, I just said we like to utilize the natural bunkers. Just keep them right where they're at and rope them off.
I appreciated that last year when I was out on the course trying to cover things for the PDGA. It made it a lot simpler for me trying to take notes and predict what was happening, especially as that event on the MPO side went into playoff and all of that and late into the evening, and it was a crazy day. What are some changes that non-players are going to notice? You mentioned some things like the parking situation, but are there some things on the property that spectators, for example, are going to come in and go, this is different from what it's ever been in the past? What are some things that they can expect?
Really, I think hopefully it's going to feel more like an elevated event. The vendors are, the layout that we have the vendors is, we can't really change it too much, unfortunately. Wild Horse has to protect their greens, and so there's not a ton of surface area for us to work with outside of, you know, the protected area. So we're going to have the main vendor tent set up and full, of course. We are going to have like a food alley down by the driving range. There's a long strip that we're going to hopefully have more food vendors set up for. So that will definitely be new and hopefully, you know, draw more people down there for food. And you'll be able to watch from a distance, of course, the pros practicing in the driving range. Outside of that, we're still trying to shoot for bleachers, which I think were really cool, a big hit.
Yeah.
And then our spectator viewing area. So if you purchase a ticket, you'll get a map. This is available on our website, lvcdg.com. You'll be able to actually see exactly where you can walk. If you're a paid spectator, you'll be able to see exactly where you can walk ahead of time and watch the pros.
And then one thing we're adding this year is we do the players party on Saturday night. There's some games and fun stuff. But we're adding this year, it's been requested a lot, but so we're adding this. Touring pros are going to be able to, you know, for an incredibly reduced vendor rate, be able to get a table and sell their, you know, signature disc that night. So do some autographs. So it's going to open it up, you know, be more of a atmosphere, kind of a, you know, meet and greet for whomever wants to come out. So. It'll be nice. You can get up and close with Jen and get a signed T-bird.
Absolutely. And also, I'm assuming there will be the big sell of the Firebirds and Destroyers this year?
Yes. Non-destroyers. But yes, there will be. And that's actually moving to Saturday this year. Good call on that. I should have definitely mentioned it. It will be Saturday night during the players party. And
awesome.
So we're really hoping for everybody to hang out on Saturday and take advantage of all the players that will be there. And also obviously these neat disc sales that we have become known for.
Absolutely. I was going to say, even the pros get in line for those. So if you have us lined up, that's a perfect time.
Yeah, I'd say it's not a destroyer, but it is a Calvin disc. So
okay. Oh, gotcha. Note. Oh. That's a great disc if it's what I'm thinking.
Yes. Well, I love mine.
Since we're all shamelessly plugging, I feel like I should go ahead and mention the PDGA is going to have a spot there in the vendor tent during this event kicking off the Elite Series season of 2023, and I'll be there manning that fort. And that's all I'm going to say right now. But you can hear in my voice, there's more to come on that particular note. Jessica,
I was going to ask you if you were sick, Grant. I thought your voice, like, I didn't know. Like, this is the quietest Grant's ever been.
I'm really bad at being coy. It's not a talent that I have. Jessica, I didn't want to, I feel like I sort of buried this lead a little bit. And I want to come back to it before we run out of time with you and Scott. And with respect to Scott, Jessica, you're the TD for this event. And I don't know if you're aware of this. You're one of only a handful of female TDs for Elite Series events since at least the year 2000. I wasn't able to go back any further than that. By the way, special thanks to my colleague Hayden Henry for the research he had already done on this particular topic. But there have only been about five female TDs since the year 2000 for Elite Series events, making you potentially the sixth. I don't even know, were you aware of that at all? Was that something that even remotely occurred to you?
Yikes. Definitely not.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take that as a no.
Now I'm just going to go put my head in the sand and you guys won't see me until March.
You have so much practice. Like, you've got this. You've been right there beside Jeff for so many years. It's probably not going to feel any different. Let him handle all the hate mail and just enjoy and ride this out.
Yeah, honestly, I did not know those stats. That is pretty awesome to hear. I can tell you, though, this is not a one-person job, whether it be a woman or a man. And it's definitely so much over the years learning. Like you said, Jen, I have been helping for a very long time. But there's no way I could do this all alone. So I may be listed as the TD, but don't let it fool you.
I think that's with any tournament, even the small events, you know, it's not usually just one person running any event. You have to have some help and volunteers, but it still definitely is a hat that you're wearing, and I'm sure you're going to wear it nice and perfectly and beautifully. Is there anything different that you're doing this year compared to the previous years? Are you doing kind of the same roles that you had done in the past? Because I'm sure you've mastered those, right? All the jobs you've done all the years.
Right.
Did they're like, just keep doing what you're doing? Or did they say, okay, now you're going to do this, this, and this?
I have definitely tried to step up my game some more. With Jeff actually working for the PDGA and traveling quite a bit. You know, I was helping man the meetings and the work days and, you know, shopping, keeping up with supplies, ordering stuff, and also running the website, our web store, which that I'm used to, but obviously all the other added stuff on top of that. I mean, it's weird to say it, or it's weird to even think about it, that it has been a little bit eye-opening, because I really do know how much Jeff did. And, you know, of course, he still does. But to try to take on more from him, it's been even more eye-opening for me as to how much dedication he has for the LBC.
If you don't know, Jeff is probably one of the most hyper-organized people I've ever met in my life.
No,
I mean,
that's not true.
The level of spreadsheets that are involved in the tournament are mind-boggling. And I mean, it's just opened my eyes as far as running things, is like how I can be more organized and what I can do more and better, you know, is just learning from what he's done in the past. I wouldn't be doing this without Jeff. I mean, that's a long story, but I got volunteering because of Jeff. So, I mean, and I've been assistant TD, I think, from 2012, and I've been volunteering since 2008. So, I mean, just the level of organization and taking it on yourself to even what I was doing before to the next level is just, it's insane.
Well, and you both have said, you know, you've been in here so many years. Jessica's been in here so many years. The volunteers have came back for so many years. I think that speaks so much volume of what a great organization, club, whatever you want to call it, the group of people that you have in Las Vegas is a really great community, enough mm-hmm. that you guys continue to volunteer all of your free time. You're not getting paid for that, you know, and everyone keeps coming back. Like Sarah here from Phoenix, she had already told me she's broke her back. She's using a walker, but by golly, she's going to be there for Las Vegas because she goes every year. You know, it's that I think is just, I mean, huge pat on the back. That should make you feel so good of what a great community you have to get those kind of results.
And that's one thing we've learned from Jeff over the years is you need to, you know, when you take care of the volunteers, make them happy, make sure that they're, even though they're out working on the course or they're, you know, it is work, but they need to be having fun and seeing some benefit out of it, you know, be it in the form of, you know, you get discs or, you know, our volunteers get fed twice a day. They get, you know, they get volunteer shirts, depending on, you know, if they're doing some nasty, dirty work, they're going to get two of them because we want them to be presentable, you know, in case the camera happens to pass by them and see them on, you know, on the DGPT network. So you take care of the volunteers, make sure they have a good time. They're going to come back. I mean, I just got a call from a volunteer that's been coming for the last 3 years that he doesn't have like internet or doesn't do Facebook, doesn't do anything. He's only a phone call. He's like, call me up. I'm like, make sure I'm on the volunteer page. I'm coming back again. And he's driving from back east. So, I mean, it's amazing the number of people come out. And then we get, you know, our leads that are always, they're the volunteers that have been there for a long time. And they're always stepping up saying, what else can I do? What, you know, what more can I do? And I mean, just an example, we have a Pam Madrid here. And she's stepped up to be our volunteer coordinator. And she brought a level of organization where it was before, you know, everybody's on a dry erase board where they're going out. Now Pam's got it, you know, she's got it computerized. She's got it, you know, our check-in, our sign-ups all, you know, organized, and it's streamline the process so that now we know where everybody is. We don't have to guess.
And so she's a teacher, so she's at that level of
that's a yeah. perfect job for Pam. Yeah.
And so one more quick shout out here for our volunteers locally. We have a ton that come from California, Utah, Arizona, other states. I mean, it's crazy how many come in from out of state. But locally here, you know, these work days that we've been having at least once a month, I think last month we had 12 people and it was pouring rain and they worked right through the rain and everybody's muddy. All our tools, our shovels, our everything is muddy.
Just remembering. Sorry.
And they are just so happy to be there.
I was going to say,
to be there working in the rain.
They probably appreciated that it was actually raining. It's like, takes you back to childhood. They're just playing in the rain.
Yes.
Yeah, it was the last new tee pad we had to put in. So they're out there and making sure that, you know, the course is tournament ready for everybody, you know.
Well, you guys have clearly taken over something that has been lovingly cultivated for more than two decades. And you're taking it to even new places. So it's great to get to hear you all sort of let us in on some of the secrets and some of what's going on and what to expect for, what is this, the 24th,
which means edition. The 25th is next year, which is a pretty big number.
That's a big one.
Well, we will definitely have you all back on to tell us all of the special things you're going to do for the 25th anniversary. In the meantime, can you go ahead and tell us one more time, you know, any website addresses or social media follows that people need to know about, whether they intend to follow this event, you know, on the Disc Golf Network, whether they want to follow their maybe amateur friends playing in the A tier, or whether they want to come and attend in person.
Yeah, so we do have our Instagram. Just look up Las Vegas Challenge. We have our Facebook, same thing, Las Vegas Challenge, presented by Innova. Our website, lvcdg.com. And we keep that pretty regularly updated with all of our info. And then, of course, Innova Champion Discs, who has been there from day one for us. They just put out a really cool article as well. I did just share that on the Facebook page, but check out Innova.com for that awesome article that they just put out.
Okay. So much support from Innova. So much. They give us unique discs to make sure that keep our volunteers happy. You know, they walk away, right. You know, volunteers will walk away with a one-off that nobody else is going to have this because they volunteered. You know, it's just, it's awesome.
which is why they come back. And yeah. I mentioned, Scott, that you put out a video for the spotters, but also if people would like to take a look at the courses, you have also put out the course previews for all three courses already, correct?
Yes. Innova posted those. Jeff Panis put those together. I did the voice work, sent it back to him. He put those up. You can go to the Innova website and see those there, their Facebook, our Facebook. So anywhere you want to go, you could check those out. There is one error there I made. It wasn't me. It was somebody else with my voice.
I said
the wrong course name on a wrong course. So sorry about that.
Oh, it must have been the one I haven't watched yet.
Yeah, probably. I watched, you know, very critical of myself. I'm watching. I said, ooh, that was not. That was I think I might have sent the wrong file in on that. I don't know.
Well, guys, that's more than enough to keep Jennifer and I and everybody I know busy in the days leading up now to the events in terms of getting ourselves prepared for everything that we're going to get to take in. So one more time, we know how busy you are. You're getting ready to leave us right now and go straight into another meeting. So thanks for, you know, holding off on dinner for us and all of that. We really appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having us, guys.
We appreciate you guys taking your time as well.
Yep. Look forward to seeing everyone soon. Thank you so much.
I see you guys.
Thank
you.
Bye.
Once again, thanks for listening to this edition of PDGA Radio, and apologies one more time for the microphone issue that we were having there during that second conversation. Issues that we didn't know were there until long after that conversation ended. Did the best I could. I'm not exactly what you'd call a Hollywood sound engineer, but nevertheless, we do know what was wrong, and we've fixed it for future episodes of PDGA Radio. See you next time.